ta' ġus, insemmilkom u nilqakom għal program ieħor il-ħrejjef, l-erf u l-maġija. U min jgħid illi il-ħrejjef huma biss fantażija din id-darba qed jitqarraq. Għaliex hawnhekk għandna ħrafa li kienet infassla fuq il-veru, fuq mara b'isem ta' Rodopus. U hemm referenzi għaliha minn żewġ storiċi tal-Qedem li t-tnejn insertaw Griegi qed nirreferi għal Strabo u Erodotu. Imma l-ħrafa hija Eġizzjana. Naħseb se tibqgħu mistaġbin meta ngħidilkom illi qegħdin nirreferu hawnhekk għall-iktar Cinderella antika. U wkoll bħal fis-Cinderella li aħna familjari magħha, insibu l-famuż sandli. Fil-fatt din ir-rafa jisima Rodopus and her little gilded sandals. Din il-verżjoni ta' Cinderella tiftaħ b'xena kemm xejn erotika. B'Cinderella qiegħda tinħasel fi x-xmara Nil. Ta' kizmin min jaf kemm kienet nadifa u sabiħa din ix-xmara. Hawnhekk bħal The Tale of Two Brothers li rajnielkom fil-programm li għadda, għandna wkoll dik is-separazzjoni. Is-separazzjoni fiż-żoni tal-Eġittu, kif kellna f'dik il-ħrafa, għandna l-Eġittu ta' fuq u l-Eġittu t'isfel. Fil-verżjoni li nafu ta' Cinderella, is-sanli tal-ħġieġ Cinderella bl-għaġla tħallih fuq it-tarax tal-palazz. Hawnhekk din l-istorja lajkla taħta fis-sanli u tieħdu għand ir-re. Lajkla tissimbolizza d-dinastija Ptolemika u f'kulturi oħra hija tajra sagra. Għalhekk kienet tintbagħat lil min kien se jsir re u hawnhekk għandna lil Rodopus li se ssir reġina. Fit-tieni verżjoni li se nsemmalkom illum ta' Rodopus, it-tajra tkun mibgħuta mill-Alla Horus. U ma temminx kif Esopu jibqa' jitfaċċa. U ngħidilkom kif, mela din Rodopus is-Cinderella Eġizzjana, kif diġà semmejna hija nfassla fuq persuna li għexet skont l-istoriku Erodotu fi żmien Esopu. U bħal Esopu kienet ukoll l-iskjava ta' ċertu Jadmon u kienet tiġi minn Tres li llum jifforma parti mill-Bulgarija, l-Greċja u t-Turkija. Qed nirreferu hawnhekk għall-Balkani. U fi żmien il-farawni Amasis ittieħdet l-Eġittu u ġiet meħlusa għal somma flus. Minħu il-poetessa Saffo li kien jismu Xaroxes. Din Rodopus tispiċċa tiżewweġ lill-farawni Amasis fis-sena 550 qabel Kristu u ssir ir-reġina tal-Eġittu. Il-ħrafa ta' Cinderella hija mibnija propju fuq din l-istorja. Rodopus tfisser ħaddejn homor. Is-seta tissemmi tek ukoll għaliex iż-żona fejn twieldet jiġifieri l-Balkani insibu il-muntanji Rodope. Semmejna wkoll illi din Rodope ġiet mbjuwa lil hu il-poetessa Saffo. Fil-verità dawn in-nisa skjavi kienu jintużaw għall-prostituzzjoni u kienu jissejħu korteġjani. Dan il-każ din is-Cinderella u fil-verità din Rodopus kienet tiġi wkoll imkasbra minn sħaba l-iskjavi, speċjalment meta spiċċat f'pajjiż barrani. Sida li kellu kontroll sħiħ fuqha kien ta' sandli tad-deb għax kienet taf tisfen. Issa meta nqablu din il-verżjoni ta' Cinderella ma' verżjonijiet oħrajn li aħna familjari magħhom, insibu l-element tal-iskjavitu li narawh ferm ċar fis-Cinderella Eġizzjana għaliex kienet skjava fil-veru sens tal-kelma. U fil-verżjoni li aħna familjari magħha, ukoll kienet saret l-iskjava ta' ħuta għaliex kellha tagħmel xogħol ibes fil-waqt li ħuta l-bniet kienu jgħixu ħajja paxxuta. Fil-ħrafa ta' Cinderella li tgħallimna meta konna tfal, hemm iż-żarbun tal-ħġieġ illi jsellifha s-saħħara t-tajba bħala rigal talli kienet daqshekk tifla bil-għaqal biex permezz ta' dan iż-żarbun tiltaqa' mar-re. Ukoll fil-verżjoni Eġizzjana, Rodopus tingħata sandli tad-deb bilan sida u bis-saħħa ta' dan is-sandli tiżewweġ lir-re. Kemm Rodopus kif ukoll is-Cinderella li aħna familjari magħha huma meqjusin bħala inferjuri u kif jgħidu l-Ingliżi ittrattati bħala outcasts, imma finalment jiġu ippremjati. Irnexxieli nsib żewġ verżjonijiet ta' din is-Sinderella Eġizzjana. Nibdew biex nisimgħu l-ewwel verżjoni li nfakkarkom tibda b'dik ix-xena erotika. U jisima Rhodopis and her little gilded sandals.
Hear, O youth, it happened once that Rhodopis, the rosy-cheeked, came down through the palm groves to bathe in the river Nile. Beautiful as the dawn was Rhodopis. Her mouth was pure of evil speaking, her two hands were pure of evil doing, and her forehead shone with the light of the double truth. Amid the papyrus reeds, on the bank of the river, she left her pure white garments and a pair of tiny gilded sandals. Then she flung herself lightly on the bosom of old Father Nile. But as she disported herself in those sacred waters, lo, there came flying toward her a mighty eagle. Above the papyrus reeds he hovered, and spied among them the gleam of gold. Down to the earth he swooped, seized one of the beautiful gilded sandals, and soared again up to the heavens. Rhodopis cried out and stretched forth her arms, but already the eagle was lost to sight in the bright beams of Ra, the sun. Now it chanced that at that very hour there sat before the temple of Ptah in the great square of the royal city of Memphis the king himself, administering justice, on his head the crowns of Upper and Lower Egypt. Before him came one dragging a poor peasant bound in chains.
"This fellow will not pay his tax of one-tenth of his harvest to the royal granary," said the tax collector.
The peasant fell on his face before the king.
"Hail unto thee, great lord of truth and justice," he cried. "Worms destroyed the half of my wheat, swarms of rats laid waste my fields, the little birds pilfered, and the hippopotami ate the rest. At such a time came thy tax collector to demand the royal tax, when I made answer that I had no corn for myself, and hence none to give thee. There came the keepers of the doors of the granary with cudgels. They threw me full length upon the ground, bound my hand and foot, and dragged me here to thee. My wife they cast into chains, my children likewise. Justice, O king, justice!"
The king rose up with flashing eyes and outstretched hand.
"Thou hast committed iniquity," he cried to his tax collector. "Thou hast oppressed the poor. The tax is for those to pay who have wherewithal to pay it. Thou shalt serve me no more. Begone! This man shall go free."
Then he bade those who held the peasant to loose him, to give him food and drink, and a gift for his wife and children.
"I would cause no child of tender age to mourn," he said. "I would despoil no woman. Go safely home, my man. Thou hast no corn or wheat to strew, but thou hast a greater treasure, even those who love and cherish thee."
And he sank wearily down on his seat of justice, for he had no wife nor child of his own. No woman had he yet found worthy to share his throne and help him rule his people. As he spoke, and while still he mused on that which he had not, there came suddenly, soaring above the square, a mighty eagle, and lo, from the eagle's beak there fell into the great king's lap a maiden's tiny gilded sandal. In great astonishment, the king picked up the trinket and held it forth at arm's length in the palm of his powerful hand.
"What maid beneath the sun," he cried, "could wear such dainty footgear?"
And as he gazed upon it, there rose in his mind a vision of what she must be like whose foot would fit that tiny sandal. Into the robes on his bosom he thrust the little thing.
"I will hear no more complaints today," he said, and bade those who bore his litter to carry him back to his palace. Once alone, in his own inner chamber, he drew forth the sandal again and studied it long and earnestly. Every moment it seemed more beautiful, and more lovely grew his vision of her who must have worn it. At length he called to him the chief of his scribes. "Write out for me a royal proclamation," he ordered. The scribe spread out a scroll of papyrus and began to draw upon it strange figures and hieroglyphics. "Let all the maidens in my land try on this sandal," said the king. "She whose foot it fits, and she alone, shall be my queen." When the scribe had finished his work, he went forth into the city, and a servant bore on a splendid cushion before him the precious gilded sandal. In all the public places the scribe read the king's proclamation, and straightway the ladies came flocking to try on the little slipper. There were maidens of high degree and maidens of low degree. There were daughters of nobles and daughters of blacksmiths, daughters of goldsmiths and daughters of glassblowers, daughters of armourers and daughters of potters. There were women from Upper Egypt and women from Lower Egypt, but not a single one among them could squeeze her foot into the tiny sandal. Days passed, and the king was in despair. The more difficult it seemed to find the mysterious maiden, the more certain he became that she, and she alone, was fitted to be his queen. At length there came one morning to the chief scribe the peasant whom the king had released from his tax, and whispered privately into his ear, "Go to the Sphinx by the great pyramids in the desert. There comes every day at daybreak to greet the rising sun a maiden beautiful as the dawn." The scribe bore the news at once to the king, and the very next morning, just as the first faint rays of the sun came gleaming through the palm trees and crept across the green Nile valley to the sandy edge of the desert, the king, wrapped well from public sight in a cloak, made his way with the scribe to the spot where rose the three great pyramids. There, too, stood the giant sphinx with the body of a lion and the head of a man, carved from the solid rock and rising solemn and grand from the sand. Just as the round red ball of Ra burst full above the horizon's rim, lo, a maiden rosy as the dawn sprang up on the mighty paw of the Sphinx and raised her hands towards the rising sun, resplendent symbol of the Creator of light and truth and all-sustaining power. "Thy appearing is beautiful in the horizon of heaven," she sang. "Thou fillest every land with thy beauty. The birds fly in their haunts, their wings adoring thee, the small bird in the egg sounding within the shell. Thou givest it breath within the egg. How many are the things which thou hast made? Thou createst the land by thy will, thou alone, with peoples, herds, and flocks. Thou givest to every man his place. Thou framest his life." No sooner had the king beheld the maiden's rosy face, reflecting all the sight of the sun, than he said, "This is indeed the one." As she finished her song and seated herself on the paw of the Sphinx, he himself took the precious sandal and humbly made his way towards her. "O maiden, that shinest like the sun," he cried, "does this belong to thee?"
The maiden smiled as she saw what he held in his hand. Then she put forth one slender bare foot and slipped it easily into the sandal. In another moment she drew from beneath her the other foot, and lo, There was the mate to the wonderful slipper. So the king asked Rhodopis, for Rhodopis it was, to be his queen. Rhodopis gave him both her hands and made answer, O great lord, who feedest on truth and justice, I ask nothing more than to share such a life as thine. Then the king led her back to the palace. There was placed on her head the crown of the queens of Egypt, with the royal asp rising from her brow. Thenceforward, by the side of the just and merciful king, as his beloved companion, she reigned over Egypt, Rhodopis, the rosy-cheeked, who wore the little gilded sandals.
Din it-tieni verżjoni li sensa malkom issa, għandna ħafna iktar dettalji kemm biex jgħinukom tifhmu aktar min kienet din Rhodopis, kif ukoll ħafna iktar dettalji ġeografiċi u storiċi. F'din il-verżjoni naraw kemm kienet smata din Rhodopis tant li issa minn flok li hi tkun l-iskjava, ikollha l-iskjavi biex jaqduha. Din ir-rafa ukoll għandha element ta' erotiżmu, bħall-ewwel verżjoni li għadna kif smajna. U titrasportak fi żmien tant imbiegħed li tħossok li qiegħed hemm tosserva x'qed jiġri. U din il-verżjoni is-sandi tagħha jibdel il-kulur. Fil-fatt jisimha The Girl with the Rose Red Slippers. Mela, x'iex nisimgħuha? In the last days of ancient Egypt, not many years before the country was conquered by the Persians, she was ruled by a pharaoh called Amasis. So as to strengthen his country against the threat of invasion by Cyrus of Persia, who was conquering all the known world, he welcomed as many Greeks as wished to trade with or settle in Egypt, and gave them a city called Naucratis to be entirely their own. In Naucratis, not far from the mouth of the Nile that flows into the sea at Conopus, there lived a wealthy Greek merchant called Charaxos. His true home was in the island of Lesbos, and the famous poetess Sappho was his sister. But he had spent most of his life trading with Egypt, and in his old age he settled at Naucratis. One day, when he was walking in the marketplace, he saw a great crowd gathered round the place where the slaves were sold. Out of curiosity, he pushed his way into their midst and found that everyone was looking at a beautiful girl who had just been set up on the stone rostrum to be sold. She was obviously a Greek, with white skin and cheeks like blushing roses, and Charaxos caught his breath, for he had never seen anyone so lovely. Consequently, when the bidding began, Charaxis determined to buy her, and being one of the wealthiest merchants in all Naucratis, he did so with much difficulty. When he had bought the girl, he discovered that her name was Rhodopis, and that she had been carried away by pirates from her home in the north of Greece when she was a child. They had sold her to a rich man who employed many slaves on the island of Samos, and she had grown up there, one of her fellow slaves being an ugly little man called Aesop, who was always kind to her and told her the most entrancing stories and fables about animals and birds and human beings. But when she was grown up, her master wished to make some money out of so beautiful a girl, and had sent her to rich Naucratis to be sold. Charaxis listened to her tale and pitied her deeply. Indeed, very soon he became quite besotted with her. He gave her a lovely house to live in, with a garden in the middle of it, and slave girls to attend on her. He heaped her with presents of jewels and beautiful clothes, and spoiled her as if she had been his own daughter. One day a strange thing happened. As Rhodopis was bathing in the marble-edged pool in her secret garden, the slave girls were holding her clothes and guarded her jewelled girdle and her rose red slippers, of which she was particularly proud. While she lays in the cool water, for a summer's day, even in the north of Egypt, grows very hot about noon. Suddenly, when all seemed quiet and peaceful,
An eagle came swooping down out of the clear blue sky. Down, straight down, as if to attack the little group by the pool. The slave girls dropped everything they were holding and fled, shrieking to hide among the trees and flowers of the garden, and Rhodopis rose from the water and stood with her back against the marble fountain at one end of it, gazing with wide, startled eyes. But the eagle paid no attention to any of them. Instead, it swooped right down and picked up one of her rose-red slippers in its talons. Then it soared up into the air again on its wings and, still carrying the slipper, flew away to the south, over the valley of the Nile. Rhodopis wept at the loss of her rose-red slipper, feeling sure that she would never see it again, and sorry also to have lost anything that Charaxos had given to her. But the eagle seemed to have been sent by the gods, perhaps by Horus himself, whose sacred bird he was, for he flew straight up the Nile to Memphis and then swooped down towards the palace. At that hour, Pharaoh, Amasis, sat in the great courtyard doing justice to his people and hearing any complaints that they wished to bring. Down over the courtyard swooped the eagle and dropped the rose-red slipper of Rhodopis into Pharaoh's lap. The people cried out in surprise when they saw this, and Amasis too was much taken aback. But as he took up the little rose-red slipper and admired the delicate workmanship and the tiny size of it, he felt that the girl for whose foot it was made must indeed be one of the loveliest in the world. Indeed, Amasis the Pharaoh was so moved by what had happened that he issued a decree. Let my messengers go forth through all the cities of the Delta, and if need be, the Upper Egypt, to the very borders of my kingdom. Let them take with them this rose-red slipper, which the divine bird of Horus has brought to me, and let them declare that her, from whose foot this slipper came, shall be the bride of Pharaoh. Then the messengers prostrated themselves, crying, Life, health, strength be to Pharaoh! Pharaoh has spoken, and his command shall be obeyed. So they set forth from Memphis, and went by way of Heliopolis, and Tanis, and Canopus, until they came to Naucratis. Here they heard of the rich merchant Charaxos, and of how he had bought the beautiful Greek girl in the slave market, and how he was lavishing all his wealth upon her, as if she had been a princess put in his care by the gods. So they went to the great house beside the Nile and found Rhodopis in the quiet garden beside the pool. When they showed her the rose-red slipper, she cried out in surprise that it was hers. She held out her foot so that they could see how well it fitted her, and she bade one of the slave girls fetch the pair to it, which he had kept carefully in memory of her strange adventure with the eagle. Then the messengers knew that this was the girl whom Pharaoh had sent them to find, and they knelt before her and said, The good God, Pharaoh Amasis, life, health, strength be to him, bids you come with all speed to his palace at Memphis. There you shall be treated with all honour and given a high place in his royal house of women, for he believes that Horus, the son of Isis and Osiris, sent that eagle to bring the rose-red slipper and caused him to search for you. Such a command could not be disobeyed. Rhodopis bade farewell to Charaxus, who was torn between joy at her good fortune and sorrow at his loss, and set out for Memphis. And when Amasis saw her beauty, he was sure that the gods had sent her to him. He did not merely take her into his royal house of women. He made her his queen and the royal lady of Egypt. And they lived happily together for the rest of their lives and died a year before the coming of Ambyses the Persian. Terġaw tkunu magħna għax se mmorru r-Russja biex nanalizzaw il-ħrejjef Russi. Se jkollna magħna l-psikanalista Dr. Lidia Ukaneva biex titkellem dwar il-ħrejjef Russi u l-effett katartiku tagħhom, u se jkollna wkoll lill-Dr. Vincenzo Darro biex ikellimna dwar il-morfoloġija tal-ħrejjef Russi.
Iva, lestu ruħkom għal program mhux biss ħafna informazzjoni, iżda wkoll biħrafa ferm sabiħa russa. Sa dakinhar jiena Magda Juice insemmilkom.